PolitiFact. It's one of numerous fact-checking websites that have sprouted up in our digital age to help us try to sift through the claims being made here, there, everywhere. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent on a Tuesday morning. And PolitiFact rates statements made by elected officials and others on a truth-o-meter that goes all the way from true to pants on fire. A reporter from PolitiFact Wisconsin joins us this morning to discuss some of the project's recent fact checks about this pandemic. So how often do you see claims on social media that leave you wondering, really? Really? Which claims about COVID-19 would you like the fact checkers to dig into? What are your questions for a reporter who investigates these things on the regular? We're at 1-800-642-1234. Eric Litke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. Eric, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get right into it. PolitiFact examined a handful of claims about the April statewide elections here in Wisconsin. And after the election, the state's GOP leaders said Wisconsin was clearly seeing a decline in cases. What rating did PolitiFact give that?
So this was a statement from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. Clearly seeing a decline, we ended up rating mostly false. Their description was that there was a decline in COVID infections. The data that they pointed to supporting that was looking exclusively at the hospitalization data. That's, of course, just one of many possible metrics we can look at to kind of get the concept of where we stand as a state. And so at the point they said that, hospitalizations had dropped slightly, but at the same time, the number of confirmed cases was consistent with the rest of the month of April. At the point they said this, the number of deaths had actually bumped up slightly. So kind of taking a more cohesive, complete approach to where we stand, it was an overreach to just pluck out one of those metrics and claim that that was supporting a decline overall.
So on the other side of that coin, in late April, State Senator Chris Larson took the opposite approach in a Facebook post. He drew a connection between the election and a surge in COVID-19 cases. Eric, what did PolitiFact find?
So again, we see politicians often trying to make really kind of simplistic connections within the coronavirus data. And there's a lot going on, understanding some of the different regional aspects, understanding the importance of the volume of testing in the number of cases. And so his post had connected a single day increase on April 22nd to the election. April 22nd, of course, was when we were starting to see the significant outbreak in Brown County. So the increase that he pointed to was not actually something that we saw coming out of the election involvement, but a jump in Brown County from JBS Packerland and others. So we rated that claim false.
So as we have some perspective here and are quickly approaching June, what can we say about those April elections and their connection to COVID-19, Eric?
Well, a few weeks back, the Department of Health Services stopped asking this question specifically. So what we know is, as of a month or so after the election, there were 71 cases where people had become infected after either going to the polls to vote or working as a poll worker. The key caveat there is we can't say for sure that that's where people became infected. They all had other possible points of infection as well. So we didn't see any particular jump. That those 71 cases accounted for about 4% of all of the confirmed cases in that window immediately after the election. So nothing that reached the level of a surge, as some people tried to claim.
Eric Litke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin, and we're looking to hear from you this morning if you've seen some posts online that you've wondered whether or not they have any veracity to them. If you have, you know what you've seen, and you've run it through your own ringer to find out if it rings true to you. Hear those stories this morning at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Mark from Wisconsin Dells, you're on the morning show with Eric Litke from PolitiFact Wisconsin.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Recently, I've been told by different people who don't know each other that doctors, and specifically doctors in Baraboo Hospital, are saying it's real easy to control COVID-19. If you catch it early, just give them vitamin D and send them home and they'll be fine. And I think it's a lie.
Vitamin D cures COVID-19 certainly doesn't ring true, I don't imagine, or haven't seen any science to that effect. Eric Glitke, have you seen a cure for COVID-19 yet?
Again, this kind of falls in the vein of, this desire to simplify the disease, and that's ultimately why it is such a formidable foe at this point, is there's no magic bullet. And it affects different people differently based on their health history, based on their age. Certainly, that would be an overreach to say that that's the one-size-fits-all approach and vitamin D is going to cure everyone. That does not line up with the science we've seen.
Appreciate that, Eric. And the other part of this is socially, how should we adapt? How should we play it safe? What can we do to protect others and ourselves? And PolitiFact Wisconsin looked into the safety of people wearing gloves after a Facebook picture went viral in early May. This one certainly piqued my curiosity, Eric. What did the picture say?
So the claim here was that if you're wearing the same set of gloves all over town, you're only spreading germs everywhere you go. We thought it was a good opportunity to kind of look into the science behind this because it's kind of one of these makes you feel better type of steps. And we see, at least some general scientific support for, masks are a good idea maybe, and here's why or the situations where. But gloves were kind of a little more all over the place. We see people wear them for their grocery shopping trip. Just talking yesterday to someone who sees servers at a restaurant using them, going from table to table with the same set of gloves. So checking in with medical experts here, there's a number of concerns. So number one, the CDC says don't wear gloves. They basically want to remind us that the key to stopping the spread with the touch contact is simply washing your hands consistently. The issues with gloves, first off, removing them is a tricky process. There's a study last year that even among healthcare workers, removing the gloves in the way that they felt they'd been trained to, 37% of the time they contaminated their hands in removing their gloves. So even if it had stopped something, odds are you're contaminating your hands afterwards. The reminder from doctors is wearing gloves is only part of the solution. Within the medical community, it's always done in conjunction with washing hands. You wash your hands before you put them on. You wash your hands after. And unfortunately, people that are wearing these around town tend to get kind of a false sense of security with it. So if I'm wearing gloves, I'm fine. But really, you're worse off if that is causing you to feel like you don't need to wash your hands as often, that you're going to end up lax in the hand hygiene department.
So when you looked at glove safety, what rating do you give it?
So the original claim in this case was that if you're wearing the same gloves all over town, you're only spreading germs, and we rated that true.
Eric, PolitiFact has a partnership with Facebook to check accuracy of viral posts. And so, and we've just got about 30 seconds here. How do you go about deciding which Facebook posts you run through the fact checker?
Yeah, because obviously there's a tremendous volume there. A couple things. We are, of course, PolitiFact Wisconsin. We try to find things that are either said or referencing what's going on in Wisconsin. And then ultimately, just something that kind of reflects maybe where culture is at generally right now. What are the questions that people have in their everyday lives? So the gloves fact check was an example of that. That's a question on a lot of people's minds. We saw a lot of different election-related claims. So just kind of finding something that's kind of a good example of what questions are people asking right now.
We have Eric Glitke of PolitiFact Wisconsin working through recent statements about the pandemic and whether they hold any water. What claims are you hearing about COVID-19 from elected officials, relatives? What do you want fact checkers to review for accuracy? How much weight do you place in statements posted on Facebook or other social media? Be a part of this at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. Just the facts. Hard to say when you're looking at social media, right? You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we have Eric Glitke of PolitiFact Wisconsin guiding us through several of the recent fact checks from his organization. We started with a few claims that swirled around social media after the April elections. Now we're exploring other fact checks about the pandemic and be interested in hearing from you. And if you're tracking statements by the governor, health officials, local lawmakers, the claims that you're seeing on social media, what do you think fact checkers should review? Let us know at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org, and Eric Litke stays with us. Certainly, our farmers have been a focus in Wisconsin, Eric, and you checked a viral Facebook post that actually came from Pennsylvania. A Pennsylvania farmer was frustrated about milk prices there, something that hits close to home here. What did PolitiFact Wisconsin find?
So this was a Facebook post that went viral. His description was that the retail price of milk had gone up 7.5% over the previous year, while the price that he got for his milk was down 23%. So pointing out kind of the discord between those two numbers. So I reached out to him. It turns out he was making a very specifically local claim, comparing the price at his local grocer to the price that it was a year previous, and then the actual milk price that he was paid. But interestingly, that's almost exactly in line with where we see the national numbers. the one caution that we have here is that any kind of reference to what farmers get versus what we see in retail is going to be a bit oversimplified. There's a real extensive formula that goes into determining the milk payments that go to farmers. It includes commodity prices, geography, how the milk is being used, whether for liquid, yogurt, cheese, butter. And ultimately, only about 30% of the milk produced in the U.S. goes into liquid form. So with that kind of caveat, his numbers were largely in line. In April, we saw the retail price for a gallon of milk nationally was up about 10% from the previous year, while the payments to farmers were down about 20%. The key thing there, experts say, is that there's kind of a lag, that the retail prices trends are reflected maybe a month or two later in what goes to farmers. That's why we kind of see that inconsistency there. So we ended up rating this claim mostly true.
Even though it was anecdotal to begin with, and it was regional, as PolitiFact Wisconsin expanded it with the data that we have available, that seems to ring true, not just in Pennsylvania with one farmer, but in general for farmers across the land.
Absolutely.
Eric Litke from PolitiFact Wisconsin. Let's bring in Joe from Lake Halley now, who joins us this morning. Joe, what's your question? Joe, are you there? We'll go to James. James is in Sauk County this morning. James, what's your question for Eric Litke from PolitiFact Wisconsin?
Good morning. Say, about 3 weeks ago, somebody from Wisconsin Public Radio interviewed the president of Bell Ambulance in Brown County when that meatpacking plant exploded with the COVID disease. And he said that instead of putting the people on ventilators, they give them a certain percentage of oxygen. And if that didn't increase the help, that wasn't enough, they gave them a second dose to double that. And if that didn't work, they put them on a CPAP machine with oxygen. And that seemed to be a lot safer than using a ventilator. And he said it was very effective. And I haven't heard anything follow-up on the news or newspapers anywhere that this is true. Why hasn't the word got out if this has been the case?
I'm glad you asked, James, because I have heard the same thing as well. And after you hear it a number of times, you begin to, maybe that's true, which is why Eric Litke is here. So I've heard this a number of times that perhaps for some with COVID-19, CPAP may be a safer method of treatment than ventilators. But just because I've heard it any number of times, especially with social media and things going viral, that doesn't make it true, Eric, necessarily.
Sure. Well, I think this is one we'd have to put on the potential to-do list. That's not something that we have looked into specifically, so I wouldn't really feel good putting any kind of a stamp on it off the cuff. But I think that is sure interesting, especially that's part of the criteria is when we see something like this pop up a few times and say, okay, is this a trend here? Is this someone speaking out of turn? I think that's exactly the right kind of question to be asking.
Let's try Joe again back in Lake Halley. You got a good question, Joe. Let's get it on the air.
Hi, thank you. The question I had was regarding a recent thing I've seen circulating saying that the CDC is saying that the death rate is 0.26%. I don't know if you had any.
COVID death rate at 0.26%, and I wonder without broad testing or contact tracing, how we could get a number like that. How do we figure out a death rate for something that we've had a difficult time tracing, Eric?
Yeah, that sounds awfully precise for what we know at this point. That obviously is one of the core questions here is death rate, of course, is the percentage of all infected that are leading to deaths. And we saw reports early on that, you know, maybe this is 3% or 5%, going by some of the questionable data out of China initially. I think we really just don't know enough to be able to put a firm death rate on at this point, because that would require a lot more widespread testing. We're still doing this largely on demand. So to be able to get a death rate that we can feel good about the accuracy of, it really means we need to have some kind of a realistic sample of testing a large base of the population, kind of a random sample type thing, and say, okay, here is the true frequency of the virus, and then in that group, how many died. And we just haven't had the resources to do that kind of broad testing yet.
Back to the question of CPAPs versus ventilators. WisconsinWatch.org had a story in early May, and it was by Bram Sable-Smith from Wisconsin Public Radio, about how Wisconsin doctors are rethinking ventilators for coronavirus, and at least for some, are trying to avoid it if at all possible at this time. And you can find that story online at WisconsinWatch.org. Eric Littke from PolitiFact Wisconsin is our guest, and there's still time for you to join the conversation and run a claim past our fact checker, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to a post on the Republican Party of Kenosha County's Facebook page, Eric, that claimed that Governor Tony Evers proposed a shutdown for 150 days, followed by a 120-day extension. PolitiFact rated that claim as it's on the extreme of the spectrum, pants on fire. Why?
So this popped up shortly after the lawsuit that struck down the Safer at Home extension. We saw it on, as you mentioned, the local Republican Party's Facebook and a number of other conservative sites as well. One of these things that says to paste and reshare it. It just has no basis in reality. This was around the time that Evers was putting together a statement of scope that was part of kind of the beginning of the rulemaking process that would need to be followed for any Safer at Home extension in the wake of the state Supreme Court ruling. And his proposal at that point just didn't say anything like that. The time that this references, 150 days followed by 120-day extension, that's how long emergency rules last in the state. They're good for 150 days, and then there's that extension available. But there was no proposal for a new emergency rule at that point. And regardless, what was being discussed then was a phased reopening, not any kind of complete shutdown as this post implied. So this just overreached with both the time period and the description of what was happening. That simply is not what the governor proposed.
Zach from Clayton emailed to ask if the coronavirus particles were smaller than an N95 mask would be able to catch. The N95 has been considered the standard bearer of at least protecting your nose and mouth. But at least Zach from Clayton has heard that the coronavirus particles may be able to pass through. Any information on that?
For those masks and especially for the cloth ones that, you know, the general public is wearing more often, there certainly is that possibility for them to pass through. The idea behind the masks has really all along been less about limiting what you're taking in. It's about limiting what is being put out. And so that's why you see stores, for example, requiring it of everyone. And if you have a widespread mask usage like that, when people are exhaling, when they're talking loudly, especially when they're coughing, then you see the mask effectiveness in stopping that from covering a large area. So that's more the going out than the coming in.
Finally, Eric, and we're running short on time, and for that I apologize, but Governor Evers posted on Facebook that Wisconsin's measures prevented at least 300 deaths and up to as many as 1,400. How did you evaluate that statement?
Well, this is certainly a tricky one. To state the obvious, there's no way we can know this for sure, right? So this
But you rated it mostly true, which I thought was interesting. And again, I'm sorry we're short on time.
Sure. So basically, this is in line with how the disease management community treats this kind of claim in general. You look at what the initial projections say, and then you see with the changes what happened in reality. And there's three different models that did show a dramatic change after the safer at home order. The two that kind of tried to put a specific number on it were around this range of 300 lives that Evers cited. So he was giving a general range, not trying to say a specific number. And because he was in line with how the community handles this mathematically, we gave him a mostly true.
Eric Glicky, safe to say we're counting on you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin, Eric Glicky. We've been discussing recent statements about the pandemic and whether those claims are rooted in facts. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.